Finance will come to order. Welcome. And we have a couple of bills up this morning, and here to hear them is Senator Bundy, Senator Olson, Senator Dyson, Senator Stedman, Co-Chair Wilken, and myself, Senator Green. And this meeting will be finished before 10 o'clock today, so we will act on Senate Bill 304 and then move directly to 235 and hear our presentation and then whatever testimony we can get to today. Are there any questions from any of the committee on Senate Bill 304, the airport parking shuttles and airport charges bill? Did anyone wish to testify? Senator Wilken, motion please.
Madam Chair, move to report Senate Bill 304 from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
There being no objection, Senate Bill 304 moves from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note. Okay, Senate Bill 235, school performance bonuses. We want you guys to get back to work.
So,
Commissioner.
The only question I had on 304 is why didn't we move it out the other day?
You weren't here.
I was here.
Oh.
That was last week. Thank you, Madam Chairman. It's good to see your co-chair and board. Even if he's a little off.
Jesus.
Is he giving you the business?
We have to work with.
I know.
I was chosen, remember? I was chosen.
Yes, you
and
were.
And we can always learn from our mistakes.
Funny.
Con, I love you too.
When the cameras aren't here.
I think I'll light up a cigarette.
Commissioner,
come on. No, Robin, don't.
Is Les going to join you? Okay, good. You guys on this side should be prepared to turn around and focus in on the PowerPoint presentations. If you'd like to move, you may, or just we'll swiggle your chair around, it'll be fine.
Good morning. I will. I've worked a little bit on this presentation, and I will try to be more succinct and to the point. Senate Bill 235 is a program designed to increase student achievement by more than 1 year's worth of growth in any given school year. It's designed to impact all schools, all grade levels. The entire staff would be eligible and in fact encouraged to work as a team in order to move a school forward to reach the incentive program. The target is growth. It's not based on a preconceived target like No Child Left Behind or something that the department or the legislature would identify ahead of time. It's based on moving each child from where they currently are to a higher performance level.
Commissioner, could I get you to go ahead and give your name and your title so that these folks who are doing the recording will have that on record?
Yes, Madam Chairman. My name is Roger Sampson. I'm the Commissioner of Education and Early Development. The tool of which will determine whether a school meets that performance level is the SBAs. And the SBAs stand for the Standards-Based Assessment. And the reason that this particular tool was selected is it's a tool that we have already developed. We give it every spring, and it has been aligned to the Alaska State Performance Standards and the grade level expectations, so that we know that if students do well on that instrument, it accurately reflects that they are learning the Alaska standards. There has been considerable dialogue about what we would use to measure growth with across our state, and there has been in any other state that's tried to move a program based on student achievement forward. Best practices tells us that we should have multiple measures. We want to check to make sure lots of things indicate that growth was real and accurate. And while we know that's the best practices for delivering instruction, we also know that we have to make sure that those measures really do get the students to what we are valuing and willing to compensate for. And the only instrument that we have that does that consistently at this time is the SBAs. The best example I can give is if I own a TV store and I want to sell more TVs and I want to incentivize the selling of more TVs, I would offer compensation to my salespeople when they sell TVs. Now, there are many other things that might lead to selling more TVs, such as taking some sales classes on strategies to sell more, or taking a test demonstrating that they know everything to know about each of these brands of TVs. That may, in fact, lead to them selling more TVs. But if I'm the owner of that TV store, while that may lead to that, I'm interested in selling more TVs. And so that's what I'm willing to pay for. So if we put that back in educational terms, using multiple measures could work. Having professional development could, in fact, increase student achievement. Taking certain classes could, in fact, lead to higher achieving students. But the bottom line is, we want kids to achieve, and that's what we're willing to compensate for. Attendance is important, graduation is important, parent involvement is important, but we can show specific examples, actual examples in Alaska, where we have kids that have perfect attendance but don't achieve well, and the opposite of that. I think there are some benefits to the state, to children, with the movement of this project. One is, if the target isn't reached, there is not a state financial liability. If the targets are reached, there is. I think it will assist Alaska in moving students through our system and being closer to workforce ready or workforce ready with essential skills. I think it does enhance our teacher recruitment efforts. People considering Alaska will know that there is the potential for additional compensation for hitting high marks of student achievement. It does link accountability directly with student achievement. This model was designed to do what other models haven't done. This model is designed to promote collaboration, targeted, focused instruction, and it's designed to spread the responsibility for reading, writing, and mathematics across a very broad base of the school workforce. You can't reach these targets for compensation unless you do focus instruction that's aligned with the Alaska standards. It is a proven private sector strategy that can work in the public sector. This is the core of the program. It's the value table. And this is the piece that places the students in Alaska that have taken an SBA, and it puts them into one of six performance categories. And the concept is to take a student, wherever they are, from the lowest performance category to the highest, and get them to achieve at the next highest level, or if they're at the advanced level, to keep them at the advanced level. The baseline is 100 points, meaning anytime you see a score up there of less than 100, you know that that student did not gain a year's worth of achievement in that year. If you see a score of more than 100, you know that that student gained more than 1 year's worth of growth. There could be some movement and development on this values table that would put more emphasis above proficient. Right now there is more emphasis below proficient, meaning we want to make sure students get to proficiency. And so we've made four categories in getting to proficiency and only two from proficient above. That could be adjusted. There's been There's been comments that have come, very, very valid comments, that aren't we willing to accept a standard that's not high enough, not rigorous enough, by looking at the proficiency and those categories below proficient? And my thought on that is, this model, in fact, goes beyond proficient, trying to move our kids to advanced. And that's something that No Child Left Behind does not do. And we could increase those categories to put more emphasis on moving kids beyond proficient. We don't have many schools in Alaska where there's large percentages of students that are performing at the advanced levels right now. The next three slides are nothing more than walking through the model. And what you have in front of you on slide number 5 is a sample of a very small school in Alaska that had 10 students of testing age. And we actually placed those 10 students where they performed last year in April. And we selected this school because it seemed like they had someone performing at almost every possible performance level on our value chart. Everything from far below minus to advanced. And to demonstrate how this would work, the next page, slide 6, takes, we guessed at current year, because our testing is not going to happen now for another couple of weeks, but if these students performed at these performance levels as listed in the current year column, we now have the information we need to apply the value table to that. And that's what's indicated on slide 7. You may have to back up between the value table and slide 7 to see how student A generated 130 points and how student J was able to capture 110 points. Then the formula is simple. You take the number of students that were tested, you take their total points, and you divide it by that number of students to get a school index score. In this case, the school index score was 103. This value table has been structured very carefully so that you could not focus on a single performance group of students. You couldn't take just the proficient kids and say, we're just going to work really hard on the proficient kids in our school and get them to advanced. You need to address all the kids in that school in order to hit the compensation levels. Slide number 8. We broke the performance and compensation levels into 4 categories. That was based on our research that said you need more than one plateau to hit. Otherwise, people will see it as too far to reach, too difficult to reach. I said, take it and split it out into multiple levels. We decided to go with 4 levels: strong, high, excellent, and outstanding. Slide 9 is the recommendation for what we would provide for incentives to those various performance levels. We've broken it into certificated and non-certificated. Those that hold a teaching certificate or administrator certificate being compensated at that level, and non-certificated at the level as indicated there. There was no magic about identifying these levels of compensation other than we felt like we need to accomplish 2 things with it. First one was, it has to be a high enough compensation level that employees, educators would be willing to go to work every day and consider a different way to work, not a harder way to work, a different way to deliver instruction to our kids. While that sounds simple, we all get into patterns year after year with our job. Changes are hard. So that's how we came up with these compensation levels. Slide number 10, expected outcomes. I'm sure these are debatable. This has been the experience. All staff have ownership of instruction, and they share the responsibilities for reading, writing, and mathematics to a much greater extent than is happening now. there is an incentive to work differently, to embrace some level of innovation, to create some partnerships that would help us move those kids to higher levels. It's not about working harder, it's about working differently and smarter. I would expect that we would see high schools look different, that we would see middle schools look different. At least the environment would be created for them to do that. They would have the administrator, they would have the classified staff, and they'd have the entire teaching staff. There's a better way to deliver to meet the needs of kids. This could create the environment for that. The last bullet on this slide is maybe the most important one. This program is designed so that individual needs of students get addressed. That's not always the case. There are ways to do that, even if you're a teacher with 140 students at a high school level that you see every day or more. There are ways to address student needs. This would help create the environment for that to occur. We need to make the shift from teaching content to teaching students. I think that this program provides the framework for that to occur. Slide number 11. We built the program backwards. We first looked at 20 years of research. Why are incentive programs working so well in the private sector and have had mixed reviews at best in the public sector? And these are the reasons that surfaced almost every single time. One, more, or all of these were identifiable in models that had failed. Most importantly, when it comes to education, is models that failed in schools, there was a predetermined target. It was not based on student growth. So, if you happened to be in a school that had high-performing kids, you had an advantage from the very beginning. And since we're public schools, and whoever walks in the door we take, you could create an unfair advantage on this type of program if you happen to get kids that were lower performing or have special needs. But if it's based on growth, then it levels the field. Unrealistic targets cause models to fail. The targets were too high, then those that were being held to those targets didn't put the effort out. If the targets were too low, the public or the owners that were funding these said, unrealistic, not giving me the results that we need, we see no difference. This has been one that has been most concerning to many people in education, and that is the conflict that's created in many models among staff. Because most merit models, performance compensation models in schools that have been tried, have been where individuals were awarded, so they created conflict. If I'm a teacher that has a successful strategy that's demonstrating my kids are performing higher in math or whatever the target is, I'm not willing to share that necessarily with my neighbor next door, since some models require only the top be rewarded. So they did not promote collaboration, in fact, they promoted conflict. If the instrument isn't fair, consistent, reliable, it creates a problem. We think we do have a strong instrument. Our weakness? We don't have multiple instruments. Is the compensation large enough to change behavior? I would hate to have this model move forward, or any model. If it's not enough to change behavior, I don't want the model to look like it failed because of that. If there's a weak commitment on the behalf of the promoters of the model or those that fund the model, then that has also caused them to fail in other cases. Let me do a brief recap with the last slide. Here's the core of this program. Most importantly, it's based on growth. So the playing field is level. If I have the lowest group of performing students in the state, I'm at no more of a disadvantage or advantage than if I have the brightest group of kids in the state, because it's based on where those kids are last year, moving them this year. I think that this model does inspire and provide the environment to really utilize the expertise that we have. We have some outstanding educators in the state. We have some incredible secretaries, custodians, instructional aides, and administrators. Absolutely outstanding. Let's encourage them to work together and figure out how to move our kids forward. I think that can happen with this model, because it does include every staff member, every employee of that school. It's a school-based model. And finally, the instrument used is the standard-based assessments. They're given every spring. It's not additional testing. It's ones we already give. We already know we have great alignment with those and the things we value. This focuses on reading, writing, and mathematics. There are concerns that reading, writing, and mathematics, our schools are much broader than that. Our kids need more than reading, writing, and mathematics. I think every one of us would agree that they do. But I think each one of us would also agree that the success in those other content areas can be greatly limited if, in fact, our kids can't read, write, and compute at proficient levels. So these have been the foundational areas to look at. I'd be happy to take questions.
Thank you, Commissioners. Senator Bennie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, as you know, I'm an enthusiastic supporter of your performance incentive ideas. Just have to mention a caution that I had heard from a teacher in discussing this issue. Now, I'm one that feels you can't pay a good teacher too much, and a weak teacher probably shouldn't be paid at all. But in other words, counsel to another job. In any case, this teacher said, hey, teachers are bright. They'll figure out a way to game the system. They'll basically cheat and get the bonus without getting the student achievement. How do you react to that?
It has been a concern.
I shouldn't say they will. Some may.
Senator Bundy, it has been a concern that's been raised, and I guess my response would be we have a couple of situations that we've already been able to kind of look into the future, if you will. The high school qualifying exit exam is an example of that's a very high-stakes situation. Many thought that cheating would be a result of the implementation of that exit exam. That has not been the case. We have some very, very strong security procedures in place, and there's a tremendous amount at stake for a professional with their license if they move into the arena of being less than honest with us. Could it happen? Yes. If, in fact, this program was brought forward for multiple years, if cheating occurred, it would become evident very quickly by that teacher or group of teachers' own peers in a short amount of time, since if you escalate or falsify what happens with students this year, it is going to be blatantly evident the next year, since it's based on the growth of students from previous year to current year. But the consequences are very grave. I have a great deal of positive thought that our professionals will remain professionals, and if they take the risk, they're risking their profession.
Thank you.
Are there other questions? Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Madam. Thank you, Madam Chair, and Commissioner. Thank you for being here today, and for your patience with me and others as you attempt to launch this program. You're absolutely doing the right thing, and I shared with this table a month or so ago when we heard this. If there was one thing I did in my 28 years in my small business in 1992, I installed an incentive program with my employees and to the person. Employees and employer, they will tell you it was the best thing we ever did. And there are a lot of parallels, as strange as it may seem, about putting potato chips and bread on a shelf and teaching kids when it comes to this type of a thing. You're exactly right. The people figured out that they weren't going to work harder, they were going to work smarter. And that propagated itself through the workforce. And at the end, the rising tide lifted all boats, and that's exactly what you're trying to do here. But as I've said before, I'm not an educator, and I don't want to see this fail. And as we've talked back and forth over the last 6 weeks, and as this works its way through the program, through the system, I just have my advice to you, and is to go slow, is to start some sort of a pilot program, so that we can be tested. And instead of people fearing this, 2 years from now, there's a line of people that want to be included in the program, and not excluded. We want teachers, administrators, janitors to be talking to the district down the road that says what a great program this is, not how horrible it is, how it just doesn't work. I think we need to make sure that the yardstick doesn't turn into a club, and we may do that if we try to do this across 400 plus schools all in one fell swoop. We need to build, as I said at the original hearing in Hess, we need to build confidence in this. And everything I just told you, I've already told you twice before, and that's why I thank you for your patience with me. I don't want to see this fail. You're doing exactly the right thing, and that is my advice. I asked my school district to do a critical analysis of this. They came back with 4 areas that they're concerned about, and we'll share those with you. They're concerned about narrowing the curriculum down to the value table. They're concerned about cheating. They're concerned about the fairness of the value table and whether it is fair across all ranges. And they're concerned about rewarding mediocrity, and they have some data behind that. And we don't need to go into those data because that's not our job here. But I would just offer that maybe other school districts have those same concerns, and when you triangulate all those things, you have what amounts to a better program, and it's easier to change the course of the ship when you're only dealing with 9 school districts instead of 450, or schools instead of 450 schools. So with that, I'm suitably comfortable and uncomfortable with this whole thing, but I'm very confident in what you're trying to do, and I would hope others offer you advice as this works its way through, and that 5 years from now we look back and say, how did we ever do without this? And with that, you need to make that first step, and so I thank you for that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Stebbins.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'm kind of curious on the process. If you have multiple schools and only one school qualifies, there's a reward back to the district office, and why you don't have to have a majority of the schools in a district, or what was the thoughts behind that?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, are you meaning if there was a pilot where not all schools were eligible? Because all schools, the way it's proposed, all schools would be eligible.
Right, but my concern is if, you know, on line 19, on page 2, you know, the department of or personnel employed at the central office of the school district in which at least one school has met the requirements, is that just one school in the central office gets rewarded, or a majority of schools, or what's the rationale behind that?
Senator Stedman, the rationale behind that, as we were working with a core group, was the thought that some, in many districts, there are central office people, for example, a reading specialist who's, quote, based at the central office but goes out and services various schools. And in a dialogue with the department and the superintendent of that district, if in fact there were people who were housed in the central office that played a significant role in any of their schools within that district in meeting that performance incentive, that they had a share in that compensation. So it would not be for all employees, it would be just those that played a significant role in any schools meeting it within that district.
Okay. Other questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Commissioner
I guess one of the things that I look at incentive programs is how well they're accepted, and certainly being coming from the private sector, my employees, as was pointed out before, certainly worked better under those conditions, and I work better under an incentive program. But there seems to be a fair amount of resistance, especially with the school districts of my area that I represent that are against it. And they've got various reasons. It's not going to work because of this and that. How do I sell that to them if indeed it does have the eventual end that you talk about, so that they can understand where I'm at or where you're at and how this program can go ahead?
Through the chair, Senator Olson. I think that you're accurate that there have been some schools and some school personnel that have indicated that they didn't think that this was a good program to support. Generally, the superintendents have been very supportive of the concept. When I spoke with many educators regarding this, there is a perception when they look at the fiscal note on this particular piece of legislation that ranges from between $3 million to $15 million, depending on the number of schools that might meet that performance, there is a perception that that money is available, and it is available for schools or for educators. And if you have that perception that it's available, then how would you like it available? Through the performance program? Through direct grants to the school? To the foundation formula? And I have tried to encourage them that I don't believe that those dollars are available. They're only available under a certain condition that performance and student achievement is attached to it. Generally, the NEA leadership has come out opposing this. They've been very direct. They were very honest. They gave me an opportunity to present it. They oppose it. And they went further to talk about if we're going to spend money, it should go for these things. The performance incentive was not one of them. It should be to raise all teacher salaries. When I talk to rank and file teachers in schools, many of them are very supportive of it. I guess to answer your question directly, how could you move this forward, is I don't believe that there is a penalty if you don't make it. There are those that disagree with that statement. They say, well, we're compared to schools that do make it. I guess that's correct. We have that now. Do you make AYP now? Do you not make AYP? Did you have a winning basketball team, or didn't you have a winning basketball team? The comparisons exist right now. I would hope that they would see it as something that's beneficial to them and kids, doing something where they would be compensated for something they love to do, which is assist our kids in growth.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Mundy.
Yes, thank you. I can't help but point out that NEA leadership is also against the high school qualifying exam, and it seems, in my mind, any form of accountability, but that's maybe just a personal prejudice. This is an opt-in program. It's voluntary, is it not?
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, all schools would be eligible. You don't have to declare whether you're in or out. It exists.
Well, might I suggest that as money is a finite and limited commodity, that you reduce the amount available and require schools to actively opt in to submit an application, a proposal to opt in, and it reduce the fiscal note substantially and say, you have to compete to be part of this. If you don't want to be part of it, fine. Mediocrity has lots of company. But if you want to work toward merit, you need to actively seek out that opportunity. And it would substantially reduce the fiscal note, which would be of concern to us in this committee, and I think should reduce some of the angst for those who feel like you know, they're being forced into something.
Are there other questions?
One last question, Madam Chairman. How long before you think the you'll have the results as to whether this program is working? How long does that have to be in effect?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I think we need to give it at least 3 years. I think there needs to be time for successful strategies to be built in our schools and then to share those across the board. And also long enough time to where a stalling or just ignoring that it's available would not give us a false indicator.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Commissioner, I had one question. I noticed that in the text of the legislation, it mentions the 2,500, the 5,500, but there's no particular reference to the scale, the charts, the computing index, and all. And is that purposefully left out of the legislation so that it can be altered, changed, improved, or without coming back to the legislature?
Madam Chairman, that's correct. It's this is designed to where the detail of this would come out in regulation.
I'm sorry, say it again.
The specific implementation detail would be developed through regulation.
Okay. Well, would it be assumed that it would follow this model?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And the only thing that's troublesome about that is in the event that there's ever another commissioner, I'm sure you plan to be commissioner for life, but if there happened to be, might they take it in another direction? And that might be a concern. I'm not particularly concerned about it because it would still be subject to somewhat legislative review. Any other questions? We do have... Yes, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'm sitting here thinking I appreciate Senator Bundy's question because I thought all along that this was just all of a sudden on day one would be bada bing, you got this new program and there would be the bureaucracy in place to measure. And so what you just said, I think, is that perhaps a year from now there would be 50 or 100 schools that may sign up and the other 350 or 400 would still be as we are today. Is that what could happen?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkin, not the way it's proposed. If we use Senator Bundy's approach, then I think that could happen, where only those that had an interest in doing this, were excited about it, would opt in.
Oh, and I thought he asked that, and you said, what I heard you say was, yes, it's an opt-in program, that it would be available for those that are interested.
I'm sorry, Senator Wilkin, it is not an opt-in currently, the way it's proposed. It is a, it would be, if the legislature approves it, it would be a program that exists and all 488 schools would be eligible.
Eligible. Would they be active participants?
Yes, they well, I hope that they would be active participants. I mean, maybe I'm not getting your question.
My high school, this program, this law is passed, and my high school says, I'm not interested in that. I don't want to play. What do you say to my high school?
If they say that, and it has not changed from the way it's proposed, and they meet a performance level, they would be eligible for it. I guess they could deny taking it.
Eligible for the compensation.
Yes.
Not eligible for the program.
That is correct.
I mean, they're eligible for the program.
Absolutely.
Everybody's
eligible for the program.
All right. So you would measure my high school regardless of what they thought?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So that clarifies that. Thank you.
Are there other questions? We have some folks online and a couple people here in the room. We've also been told that in Anchorage at the LIO, there are a group of students from New Direction Resource Center, and we want to be sure and welcome them and hope you're enjoying this presentation and invite you to join us at any time you can. Thank you for being here today. And also in Anchorage is John Alcantara of the NEA. John, would you announce yourself and give your testimony?
Absolutely. Chair Green, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. Members of the Senate Finance Committee, thank you for this opportunity to testify. My name is John Alcantara. I serve as Government Relations Director for NEA Alaska, representing almost 13,000 members. NEA Alaska believes it is essential the state of Alaska focus its education resources on student achievement. That focus should emphasize programs that are proven avenues to increase student achievement, such as qualified teacher in every classroom, supported by qualified administrators and classified personnel. Research tells us this is the number one factor in student achievement. Next is small class sizes, which provide the opportunity for one-on-one attention. Professional development for all staff, which includes teaching strategies to motivate students with varying learning styles. Planning time, which allows for collaboration by staff to plan implementation of innovative strategies. Early childhood reading readiness programs, which provide the foundation skills for years of student achievement. Intervention programs, which provide remediation opportunities that lead to student success and provide encouragement. Mentoring programs for new hires, which provide the employees access to a skilled colleague who can demonstrate winning strategies. To focus on proven programs, school districts need to be adequately funded. NEA Alaska believes that before the state considers new programs, that it adequately fund our schools. In regards to the specific proposal outlined in Senate Bill 235, please consider the following. Commissioner Sampson should be commended for his efforts in avoiding the pitfalls of past failed performance incentive programs. He realizes that school climate is one of the effective factors in a school. The commissioner's inclusion of the entire school staff in the incentive program is acknowledgement that everyone in the school helps set the learning climate. High student expectations is another of the factors of effective school. The proposed program focuses on student growth and the expectation that students can exceed the expected annual growth. However, the reality is that trying to fashion an objective performance incentive program in the public schools is like being a tomb robber. There are too many traps to avoid. The greatest obstacle is the changing environment of the student. The school cannot control the home life of the child. The school cannot control the happenings outside the school that impact the student, and the school cannot control the emotional changes in the student. Yet the growth of the student will be measured by a single test given on a certain day. Senator Lisa Murkowski acknowledged the shortcomings of such a measurement in determining adequate yearly progress. We must avoid such a measurement in rewarding our school employees. Commissioner Sampson came to the annual NEA Alaska Delegate Assembly in February to present his proposal to 350 delegates from every school district in Alaska. He received a lot of critical feedback. These delegates, who are the number one factor in student achievement, must be confident in the tools they are provided. They are skeptical of the success of this tool's actual impact on student achievement. The bottom line was the resources should be used in proven programs that get to every school, not to certain schools. The concerns voiced by the delegates included: this program competes for scarce resources. The program provides an incentive for good teachers to transfer to schools that receive the incentive. Veteran teachers who have a proven record presently transfer out of Title I schools. It is natural for an employee to be want to be part of a championship team. The program implies that teachers are not presently trying to teach the best student achievement. Teachers are doing their best. They need more time to teach and more time to collaborate. The program is not an effective recruitment tool when compared to competitive compensation and a pension plan that provides a retirement with dignity. In closing, I would urge Senate Finance Committee to consider the returns on investments in proven programs, such as the teacher mentoring program, attracting and retaining quality educators, reading readiness programs, and early childhood programs. Invest in these proven programs for all schools before you invest in this program, which mirrors failed programs in other places. Thanks for your time and consideration.
Thank you very much. Senator Olson, do you have a question for Mr. Alcantara?
Thank you, Madam Chairman, I do. Mr. Alcantara, one of the things that has you pointed out is sticking with the established programs that have happened in the past, and I think that to a certain degree you are right, but if you look at that, we'd be concentrating on the three R's that are out there. Obviously, time has gone on, and our society is a lot more complicated than it was back when I was in school, especially in the boarding program. But the thing that really concerns me is the number of dropouts that I've seen in rural Alaska. And because of that, I think that what's gone on is that there needs to be some type of program out there that concentrates on being able to make sure that these students do not have that, these schools don't have the bad record of having these increased dropouts. Unless there's another program out there, I don't see how we're going to do that by some of the things you've just proposed. Unless I'm missing it, is that a fair question to ask to you?
Through the chair to Senator Olson, I guess I got a little lost on what the question actually was, but I guess I share your concern as a lifetime Alaskan that has traveled fairly extensively in rural Alaska, but have not lived out there. There are several problems that plague our schools, and the dropout rate is certainly one of them. I don't know necessarily how this $15 million program will help that. I understand your thought process of try new things and maybe we'll have some success. I guess I would go back to Senator Wilkin, I thought earlier in the conversation gave some sound advice. So I don't know how the Senate Bill 235 program would help those problems in rural Alaska and in urban Alaska that you mentioned.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions for Ms. Jocounter? Okay, in the room we have Mary Frances.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Good morning. For the record, my name is Mary Frances. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Association of School Administrators, typically known as the Superintendent's Organization. As the Commissioner mentioned, there are some varying opinions on this program, but for the most part, the superintendents in the state definitely recognize and support the program for its positive outcome for an entire school staff. I think anyone who has worked in a school district understands that a school is a family of teachers, principals, paraprofessionals, food service workers. When I was a superintendent, I had a food service person who was very involved in the academic program of the school, and creating that positive school climate has a tremendously positive impact on student achievement and student growth. The growth model is what's important here as well. I would note, Senator Olson, that many, many years ago I worked in the Lower Kuskokwim School District, and it's my belief that the schools in areas in which student achievement perhaps is not as high as in other areas of the state actually would be the ones to benefit from this program. I recall presenting data to the school board in LKSD where really the percentage performance was not particularly admirable, but following a year, I presented this incredible growth data, and that has such a positive impact on not only kids, but the professionals who work with them. So the concept of rewarding and acknowledging a whole school's role in the growth of a student that exceeds 1 year is very important. So for the most part, my members of this Superintendent's Association support the concept of what this program is trying to achieve. We do, however, think that its funding ought to be outside of the substantial need for an increase in the base student allocation. So with that, I'll entertain any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mary Frances? Thank you very much. Carl Rose. Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Carl Rose, Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. Madam Chairman, we rise in support of Senate Bill 235, and there are a number of reasons why. Many of them have been covered. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about what some of the research says and the idea of creating a positive learning environment and the whole idea behind alignment. You know, when you talk about education and student achievement, there are a number of components that come into play. Specifically, I'm citing from some of the work of Katie Haycock. She's with the Education Trust. Two things that are striking for her. Number one, in terms of student achievement, is the quality of teaching, the impact that a quality teacher can have on the development of a child. I don't know who does this kind of research, but they have research that shows that a highly qualified teacher, 3 years in succession for a child, puts them on a path of success that is quite remarkable. Conversely, 3 years of instruction with a poor teacher puts them on a course that may be irreparable in terms of kids ever catching up. When I read that kind of research, I get a little bit concerned. Who sits by and watches this sort of thing? Well, that's what researchers do. The conclusion I come away with is that instruction is critically important. The other thing is the environment. You know, she has research that shows that schools that are in economically depressed areas, areas of ethnicity, inner city schools that perform at the highest rates in schools or in states around the nation. And what they found is that focus on instruction is critically important, but the attitude that people bring to a school that says we're not going to pay attention to the socioeconomics, we're not going to pay attention to race, and we're not going to pay attention to the difficulties that we face in our schools, we're going to focus on what kids need. And how do we go about serving the needs of kids? Of course, alignment is critically important when you talk about curriculum, instruction, and assessments, and all those things are critically important. But the attitude that you bring is also important, and the research bears that out. So I would share with you, when we talk about a bill like this, what I see here is an attempt to try to change the behavior, the attitude of people, not so much to say that we have to pay you to behave like this, but as has been mentioned before, the issue of compensation, the issue of you know, when you go out into the marketplace and there's someone who's helping you, who's paid on commission, as opposed to someone who isn't, you get a different kind of service. And I'm not suggesting that we have to pay our professionals to do a better job, but I think the word that we use at the association when we work in communities is you should do things intentionally, with forethought. I mean, for many of us, I think we do the best job that we can in raising our kids, but if we were intentional in our actions, it would be more deliberate. We'd ensure that things happen, and that's what I think we're trying to do in schools. That's what I see in this bill. We're asking people as part of a school community to be intentional in their actions, to focus in on what kids need, to identify when they're struggling, to get them the help when they need right now. And so I rise in support of this bill. The whole concept, I think, has merit. How we make this thing workable, I'm sure it's going to be a struggle. Anytime you do something statewide, there's going to be some difficulties. But the intent here is to try to create a positive learning environment. The research suggests that quality instruction and a positive learning environment makes all the difference in the world for young people who have no control over the education that they're going to receive. So I would suggest that we have research. I have, you know, if you take a look at the educationtrust.org, they have reams of research that really fits us here in Alaska, very diverse settings that perform very well. So with that, I'll hold my comments here and try to answer any questions that you might have. But I feel very strongly that we need to do everything we can in our communities. And I'm not just talking about schools. I'm talking about parents and people in our communities to take an interest in the future, and the future is our kids. So with that, I'll try to answer any questions you have.
Anyone have questions for Carl Rose today? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Mr. Rose, thanks for coming in this morning to tell us about what's gone on. I'm particularly interested in the research that has been done. Where has this particular program, with its uniqueness, been looked at in the past, implemented, looked at in the past, and studied to see what the results are, because it is a fairly expensive endeavor?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, if we're talking about, are we talking about a program or the research that I've just described? Are you asking about the research I've just described?
No, I'm not talking about the research. I'm talking about this program, if it has, in its uniqueness, ever been implemented in any other school district or state or region, and to see if there's been research to see how effective, if it has been effective one way or the other.
I can't comment on that in terms of where this has happened before, but I do know that in individual schools, there are a lot of celebrations in terms of, you know, when schools are doing well. There are a lot of celebrations within communities and within schools. This is talking about compensation to try to deliberately get people to work together. And, you know, when you talk about a growth model, it's important that everyone make progress in the school. It's an entire school. It's not just one group of teachers. It's an entire school. And I think I would share with you, because there was a comment earlier about people moving around and want to be part of a championship team. Mm-hmm. I would suggest to you that the schools that are performing below proficiency are the places that I think these initiatives are going to be critically important, because those are the areas of growth. If you have high-performing schools, it is difficult to move high-performing students much farther up the line in large increments. Those low-performing schools have tremendous room for growth, and I think that's what we're after.
Thank you, Madam.
Senator Bundy.
If I might just share an observation. I had the privilege several years ago of visiting an inner-city school in New York, and the school, or area of the school was in, looked like a Hollywood set as far as all the inner-city drug-infested, broken windows, criminal element, places that I would not have been comfortable walking at high noon, much less at midnight. The school was surrounded by a cyclone fence to keep the druggies out. But the kids inside there were incredible achievers, because it was something different than what we've been doing that hasn't been terribly successful. And these kids were so excited to demonstrate their knowledge. And that was the opening phrase, raise their hand, and teachers were Mr. and Mrs. and Miss. May I demonstrate my knowledge in whatever the subject was? And if you had a visitor, they were even more excited to be able to demonstrate their success, their achievement, their knowledge. And it was something different than what I think we could easily call the typical New York school, or what's that old saw? You keep doing the same old thing, you're going to get the same old results. And we have an opportunity here to not do the same old thing.
Absolutely. Are there other questions for Carl? Thank you for your comments. Very nice. I assume that some of you still have some more questions and would like some input on this. I'll ask you to get that information to my office, and if you have any suggestions or whatever, we'll bring this back up next week, and we'll see if we can't figure out how to get it on its way.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Senator Wilkin, you have a motion for us today.
Madam Chair, I'd move to report Senate Bill 235 from committee with individual recommendations and attached significant fiscal note.
Is there objection? No, there being no objection, Senate Bill 235 goes on its way with individual recommendations and fiscal note. Thank you very much. On Monday, we will have Senate Bill 206, which is Senator Bundy's material witness bill, and Senate Bill 289, which is, I think, the omnibus insurance bill. We will, Senator Wilkin.
Madam Chair, I'm on the Monday morning plane.
And Senate Bill 1. Ooh, I forgot.
I'll be here Sunday night.
Senator Dyson.
Same.
Well, you guys are going to miss a wonderful hearing. I assume you'll be here, Senator.
I'll call in. I will be here. And
we'll get it done and over with before you guys get back. No, that's fine. You'll get in here by the second hour.
I'll call in.
Right. Okay. Anything else, Senator Wilkin, that you need to announce? And for the record, if you have not seen the schedule for next week, there's a hearing tentatively scheduled pending referral of Senate Bill 305 on Friday and on Saturday. And we will, if we get the bill and it's ready to be heard, we will hear it both those days. Any other announcements? With that, we are adjourned.